We needed a car. We needed to get Nevada to the hospital.
Stay right here,
Connor ordered in his officer voice. Don't move. He sprinted to the bay. Nevada looked after him and very deliberately took two steps forward. My phone rang. A moment later, Alessandro's phone went off as well. I answered without looking. Yes?
It took Murat into the pit, Stephen barked. They're fighting it now and losing. Tatiana's on her way. Can you get there?
I stared, mute, torn between two vital things. Nevada waved at me. Go to the pit. I'll be fine. Get to the hospital when you can. On my way. I spun around, ran into the house, and found Arabella in her bathroom, putting on lipstick. Nevada's in labor. Arabella dropped her lipstick into the sink. The thing in the pit grabbed one of the primes and is attacking the worksite. I have to go. Yesterday, Victoria threatened Nevada and the baby. Go with her and don't let her out of your sight. If it all goes to shit, I don't care if you were in the middle of that damn building. You transform and you get her out of there. Arabella took off running. I charged out of the bathroom and ran back downstairs to get my sword. I took a turn too fast. Rhino's overpowered engine roared as I accelerated out of the turn. Alessandro grabbed the door handle to steady himself. We'd had a choice of the spider or Rhino, and we both picked armor over speed. Rhino would plow through anything in our way and get us there. If I didn't kill us first.
What the hell was he doing back on site?
I growled.
Probably getting all the equipment out. They are expensive machines.
Alessandro shook his head, his eyes sharp and focused.
Damn idiot didn't listen to me. I told him to get his people out of there.
I did too.
I warned him.
Alessandro bared his teeth.
I said, don't think about leaving, don't make any preparations. Just walk off at the end of the day like normal, leave the equipment where it is, and once everyone is out, pull the guards back to the outer perimeter. The fool went back for the assets.
And once the Abyss saw its food and brain supply leaving, it reacted violently. It required metal and humans to expand. Without a continuous supply of either, it would have to leave the relative safety of the pit to procure it. Every time it sent its nodes out of the mire, it ended badly. We tore past the dealership where we'd fought the constructs.
I don't have a plan, I told Alessandro. I don't know how to kill it. It's impossible to destroy every node, and as long as one survives, the Abyss will rebuild itself.
We'll deal with that gap once we've jumped it.
That doesn't even make sense.
You worry too much.
A sentient self-repairing construct the size of 10 city blocks is on a rampage, and you're telling me not to worry.
It will be fine. You'll see.
It wouldn't be fine. Call Linus. My phone dialed the number and the beeps echoed through the cabin. No answer. Just like the first two times I'd called him since we left the house. Linus always took my calls. I didn't even want to think about why he wasn't picking up. That was a bottomless rabbit hole of anxiety and speculation, and we had bigger problems on our hands. We shot onto the final bridge. The pit reclamation island was on fire. Flames tore out from its shore, colliding with a forest of tentacles flailing in the water. A hunter construct leaped out of the water and into our path. I rammed it. The impact knocked it aside and we sped past it. All around us, the pit churned. The island wasn't on fire. Rather, the fire circled it, a wall of living flame 20 feet tall. Here and there, the Abyss's constructs, hulking forms melded from vegetation and bone, emerged from the water to storm the shore and fell apart, consumed by the inferno. The water at the island's edge boiled. Plumes of steam rose, hissing. The temperature inside the car jumped. Alessandro grabbed his phone and dialed a number.
We're coming in.
He hung up.
Keep going.
The firewall towered in front of us. I drove straight at it. The flames parted. We shot through the gap and I mashed the brakes. Rhino skidded and slid to a stop. In the middle of the parking lot in front of the HQ building, Tatiana Pierce stood in an arcane circle of dazzling complexity. Her eyes were pure fire. Workers huddled around her, clutching weapons and sweating. A young man in a suit, one of the secretaries I had seen in the House Pierce building, stood by with an impassive expression on his face, holding a cell phone. I rolled the window down.
Welcome to the party,
Tatiana grinned. Have you found Murat?
Zhang is looking for him. Go down the street directly behind me. I'd go with you, but I'm a little busy on the grill.
She laughed, her eyes sparkling. I stepped on the gas and steered Rhino around her and down the street. Ruined buildings in various stages of repair slid behind us, and through the gaps, Tatiana's flames glowed like a magical aurora borealis. I couldn't even begin to calculate the kind of power required to maintain a wall of that size. We passed an abandoned Burger King, a convenience store, a deli with dusty windows. Ahead, the street and the island ended, the swamp beyond it blocked by fire. Where the hell was Stephen?
Up there.
Alessandro pointed to the right, at a four-story building jutting out of the rubble. I squinted. A man in a suit stood on the roof. Found him. I parked and grabbed Linus's sword. Alessandro leaped from the vehicle, carrying the prototype of the prototype Linus had given him. The building's automatic door stood ajar, stuck permanently open. We passed through it. The inside was dark like a cave. A musty stench filled the air, like hundreds of waterlogged books were drying in it. Alessandro turned left. I followed him and we came to a door leading up the stairs. He sprinted and I did my best to chase him. One flight, two, three, four. Alessandro had disappeared into the gloom above. I picked up speed, sprinting. Above me, a door banged. Probably Alessandro emerging onto the roof. Another flight of stairs. A door loomed ahead. Finally, I stumbled through it into the sunlight, gasping for breath. The roof was paved and square. Stephen stood at the far edge, looking out into the pit. Alessandro was next to him. I ran to them. Heat washed over me. Tatiana's wall ended about 20 feet below us. A clump of vegetation protruded from the mire about 50 yards away. The long green stems, striated with metal, shifted against each other, braided into a fist.
Is Murat in there? Stephen asked me. Can you feel his mind?
I reached out. My magic grew, spiraling, and found a mind, glowing with purple.
He's in there. Is he alive?
Yes. Murat was emanating a lot of magic.
He's fighting.
Stephen took a deep breath and said something in Mandarin. It sounded like a curse. Can you open a path to him through the water? I asked. Stephen backed up, all the way to the door.
That won't be necessary.
He leaned forward.
I told him to leave the damn bulldozers. The man never listens.
Everyone had told Murat to leave the damn bulldozers. If I ever did business with House Kazarian, the contract I offered Murat would have to be a mile long to account for every harebrained idea he came up with. Stephen sprinted. He tore past me, pushed off the ledge into a leap, and for a moment he flew through the air, over the wall of flames, arms raised like wings. Breath caught in my throat. Stephen plunged down. He landed on the water as if it were solid ground. Waves pulsed from the impact. He thrust his arm out. Water flowed into his hand, forming a long transparent shaft with a blade on the end. He'd made a guandao. Oh, wow. Stephen spun the watery glaive and dashed across the swamp to the clump of plants. A tentacle emerged, snapping at him like a whip. Stephen spun the guandao without breaking stride. A fan of water struck from the blade, severing the tentacle like a giant razor. Arabella would die. Stephen attacked the green wall, slicing, cutting, spinning, and stabbing, flawless and graceful like a genius dancer.
Catalina, Alessandro called.
Are you seeing this? This is insane.
Listen to me very carefully. I need you to draw a circle that can generate a null space. A really good one.
I turned around. Alessandro was staring in the opposite direction, at the bridge leading to the island. I raised my head and froze. Constructs marched through the mire. huge industrial monstrosities, gleaming in the sun with metal and magic. I had seen them before. My brain supplied the right names. Climber 15, Crawler 11, Breaker 6. Others I couldn't name. People with weapons rode atop them. And at the head of it all, on top of a colossal Digger 12, sat Cheryl Castellano. I couldn't see Cheryl's face from this distance, but I knew it was her. My brain feverishly assessed and calculated. 9 huge constructs. At least 30 people. Cheryl didn't have a private army. She had house security, but she wouldn't use them for this. One look at the forest of tentacles and constructs, and even the dimmest person could tell that this wasn't normal magic. House security didn't have the kind of discipline to keep their mouths shut about what they saw. If the assembly called on them, they would testify. No, she wouldn't deploy house security. That meant Archon's people were riding on the constructs. And that meant... She's going to kill all of us, I said.
Yes, Alessandro said.
She knew she couldn't destroy the Abyss, so she'd settled for the next best thing. She would kill everyone who knew about it. Tatiana, Stephen, Marat, all the workers, and the two of us would die in the pit. What a great tragedy. She would bravely carry on the work of her fallen partners, free of oversight, free to interact with her creation at her leisure. Maybe a part of her still thought she could control him.
Do you need chalk? Alessandro asked.
I pulled chalk out of my pocket.
Good.
He walked to the edge of the roof facing Cheryl's armada, crouched, and drew a perfect circle with a practiced swipe of his hand. Another circle, a line of glyphs. So House Sagredo had a house spell of its own after all. The constructs drew closer. One crawled along the bridge. The rest stomped their way through the mire. Tentacles slapped against the spidery metal legs of Climber 15. Buzzsaws slid out of the construct's legs, chewing the plant and metal to pieces. There were too many. Even with Tatiana and Stephen, there were too many constructs for us to overcome, not to mention the trained killers they carried. We were stuck between the Abyss and Cheryl's army.
Trust me, Alessandro said.
Even if I used all of my power and beguiled their minds, the most I could do was throw them at the Abyss. United, they would injure it, but not destroy it. It would return. The longer people I beguiled stayed under my power, the more they loved me. Those who survived this fight would tear me apart, consumed by the need to possess a piece of me. There would be no winners here. The chalk felt clammy in my fingers. An odd kind of calm washed over me, clearing my fear. This was my job. I would do it, and I would fight to the bitter end. I dialed Tatiana's number. The male secretary answered.
Yes?
Tell Tatiana that Cheryl is not the cavalry. The thing in the swamp is her doing. She's coming to kill us.
We know, he said, and hung up.
Cheryl was a threat to us. But the Abyss would end our world if we let it. If I let it. I put Linus's sword down and crouched. I could draw a dozen circles with a null boundary, but none of them fit. Half of them would cut me off from the environment. I would be safe in the circle, but magically deaf and blind, able only to expel magic by relying on my eyes and ears. The other half would allow me to use my mind, but wouldn't give me the power I required to project my magic. I would need power and range. Lots and lots of power. I needed my senses, too. The Abyss would try to reach me once he realized I was here. I had to know what he was thinking. The half-finished designs in my head coalesced. My incomplete house key arcane circle merged with the Aldrin projection design, augmented by the Tremaine targeting band. Yes, that would do it. It would give me the null space and the power I required, and it would unchain my mind. The circle glowed in my mind. I just had to replicate it. I drew faster than I ever thought I could. A drone plunged from the sky and hovered near me.
"Do not shoot this down, you shit weasel!"
Bug yelled. Alessandro and I kept drawing, crawling around on our hands and knees. "Is Nevada okay?" My voice came out dull. I was trying to hold on to the pattern in my head.
"She's fine. There is a fucking construct army marching here."
"I know," I told him.
"What do you need?"
"Record her. Record everything that happens. If we died, Cheryl would not get away with it."
"I have 6 drones on it."
The constructs were almost on us. I had no idea how long Tatiana could hold out.
"Shit,"
Bug cursed. I chanced a glance over my shoulder. Steven had hacked the wall of tentacles into chunks. He stood on the island of vegetation, his face impassive. Marat slumped next to him on one knee. 3 hunters rose from the swamp, each with 2 hounds. They ringed the 2 men. There was nothing I could do for them right now. I went back to drawing. Glyphs, more glyphs. If this didn't work, it had to work. Tatiana's voice came out of the drone. I spared half a second to glance up. A small digital screen on the drone showed Tatiana in her circle and Cheryl atop the digger just beyond the wall of flames. I was right. She'd ridden on the leading construct.
"Hi there."
Tatiana sounded upbeat.
"We've come to reinforce you," Cheryl announced.
"Oh, is that what you're here to do?"
"Let us in, please."
"I had a really interesting conversation with Steven last night," Tatiana said. "Is there anything you want to share?"
"I have no idea what he told you. Marat is out there dying. You're under assault. Let me help you."
"We wouldn't be under assault if your fake ass hadn't made an abomination and unleashed it into the pit."
"What were you thinking, Cheryl? Jesus, were you dropped on your head as a baby? Did your parents not hug you enough? Or are you just greedy and stupid?"
Cheryl recoiled as if slapped.
"How dare you?"
"How many people have you killed? Felix is dead because of you. We may all die because of you. Is this the sort of shit you think my family needs right now? I swear to God, Cheryl, as soon as I'm done with this, I'm going to burn your house to the fucking ground. Scorched earth, Cheryl. You will learn the meaning of those words."
A vicious grimace twisted Cheryl's face.
"You were always a fat, stupid bitch. Your brother is a fucking arsonist, and all the money in the world won't change that. You're trash. Your family is trash, and you will die in this fucking swamp. Bring me her head."
"Holy shit balls," Bug muttered.
I glanced at the screen. On Cheryl's left, the towering 30-foot breaker resembling a rhino on 6 massive legs started toward the flame wall. The 4 people on its carapace readied themselves. One of them snapped into a mage pose, arms bent at the elbow, palms up, fingers cradling invisible spheres. A translucent, fiery shape coalesced around Tatiana. Her hands sprouted foot-long ghost claws. A monstrous, luminous head formed over Tatiana's face. Spikes grew from her back. It was as if a demon made of fire and glass enclosed her. Hellspawn. A House Pierce high spell. Tatiana grinned, her eyes pure fire, and the demon grinned with her. The breaker pushed through the flames. Tatiana opened her mouth and vomited a torrent of white fire. The front of the breaker sagged, melting. The 4 people on top of it went up like human candles. Molten metal dripped. The breaker swayed, tried to back up, and collapsed into the dark water.
"Welcome to hell," Tatiana roared in a demonic voice.
I had the whole outer band left. I couldn't watch anymore. The chalk was a small nub in my fingers. I dropped it and pulled a 2nd stick out.
"Crush her,"
Cheryl howled through the drone speaker.
"All of you, now, forward."
The inner boundary, the intersecting lines,
The air smelled of soot and burning plastic. I didn't have time to watch.
Bug, what's happening?
A lot, Catalina. There's a lot going on right now.
Be more specific.
Tatiana keeps spitting fire. Cheryl is sending her monster constructs in. Tatiana melts them, but they keep reforming. Minus the poor bastards that were on them. Behind us, a man is running around on water, slicing monsters into pieces. It's Armageddon.
The Hellspawn was immensely powerful, but Tatiana couldn't keep it up forever. Sweat drenched my forehead. Just a bit more time. The island shook. I looked up. One of the constructs made it through, stomping through the buildings. People screamed.
Where are you?
Alessandro asked, his voice like a bucket of icy water.
Almost done. Just a little longer.
Shit!
Bug swore.
4 more constructs and 3 armored transports coming down the bridge. I think we're fucked.
I drew the last line, stepped into the circle, and sent a pulse of magic through it. A pale green glow ran through the chalk lines, sending little puffs of dust into the air.
Work. Please work.
The small circles inside my design turned, realigning. The glow dashed through the chalk, but there was so much ground for it to cover. In front of me, the island burned. Pillars of black smoke streamed into the sky. A half-melted mechanical monstrosity rampaged through the island, dripping molten metal. A stream of white fire smashed into it, as if a mythical dragon had emptied its belly. Molten metal ran, but the construct kept going, flailing its metal arms into the buildings. Debris flew. Concrete exploded. Bug was right. This was Armageddon.
Tell me when,
Alessandro said. He stood in his circle, loose and ready. The pattern around his feet stretched to cover nearly half of the roof. I'd never seen anything like it. I pushed my magic, trying to claim the circle faster. The firewall around the island sputtered and died. Either Tatiana ran out of magic, or she was dead. The troops from the armored transport flooded onto the island on foot. Gunfire crackled. It had to be now. The outer boundary of my circle shone. Magic punched me. So much magic. I reeled, trying to absorb it. For an agonizing second, it felt like trying to hold a jerking fire hose. Then suddenly, the current and my power snapped together into one steady stream. The pit opened before my mind's eye, and I saw everything in a fraction of a second. The bright magenta star of Cheryl's mind in front of me, the duller white glow of Tatiana all but extinguished, the sharp pale radiance of Stephen behind us, the faint purple smudge that was Marat, the collection of weaker lights among Cheryl's private army, Alessandro's supernova, so powerful it took my breath away, and the glowing nebula of the abyss, wrapping around us and stretching far back into the pit. The abyss's presence brushed against me, eager. Visions of dying humans floated over my mind. I tested the circle and felt the impenetrable barrier of null space. Now, I said. Orange light ran through the lines of Alessandro's design. A whirlwind of magic and orange sparks wound around Alessandro, lifting him off his feet. He leaped up and hung, suspended, the magic spinning around him faster and faster, a maelstrom ready to be unleashed. The building underneath us shook. The construct battle kept going, Archon's people disembarking, oblivious to the breathtaking storm building up on the roof. Alessandro raised his head. His skin glowed and his eyes overflowed with magic. It spilled out of him, radiating like a corona from the sun. He looked like an angel, a furious, majestic creature, filled with astonishing power and sent down to punish. I forgot to breathe. A blast wave of pure magic tore out of Alessandro and rolled through the pit. The constructs collapsed. Their hulking metal forms split into components and tumbled down. The tentacles still swirling through the water disintegrated, falling apart. Refuse blanketed the surface of the mire. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Stephen fall into the water with a splash and disappear under the surface. In my mind's eye, the area around us turned dark, as if a glowing city suddenly lost all power. A third of the abyss vanished, and what remained crawled away from us. All went silent. Oh my God! He'd nullified their magic. A hoarse, high-pitched scream made me turn. Cheryl stood in the middle of the parking lot, Tatiana slumping a few feet away. Cheryl balled her fists and shrieked, wailing. It was the sound of pure panic. We were born with magic. We felt it in ourselves and others. We used it the way we used our eyes and ears. Every mage down below must have felt as if they had gone blind and deaf all at once. Only Alessandro's magic remained, burning like a sun. So there it was, the true power of the Antastasi. Alessandro landed in the circle, the light of his magic suffusing him, his face beautiful and terrible all at once. All traces of the man I knew had vanished. He wasn't the artisan. He wasn't even human. He was a force determined to slaughter. Alessandro raised his hands. Two blades of pure magic formed in his fingers. He sprinted to the edge of the building and leaped out of sight. Fear slapped me. Bug! On it! The drone moved to me, hovering outside of my circle's boundary. On the screen, Alessandro fell on Archon's troops. His left blade carved through the first man like he wasn't even solid. A woman on his right died before she knew what was happening, her chest split in two by a magical sword. In my mind's eye, the glowing cloud that was the abyss compacted, crested like a wave, and surged toward us. Oh no. I spun around to face the swamp. A horrible deep bellow tolled through the pit. Constructs poured out of the mire, swimming through the water toward us. Dozens and dozens of constructs. The hounds, the hunters, the strange creations I didn't know how to name. Tentacles slithered between packs of razor scales. And behind it all, an enormous mass of flesh, metal, and plant surfaced, its own island in the pit. Alessandro had hurt him, and the abyss had unleashed his army. On the little island, Stephen, soaked in dripping water, wrapped his arm around Marat. The summoner looked on the brink of collapse, the corpses of arcane beasts he must have summoned littering the ground around him. They were directly in the path of the abyss's horde. There were too many. Even if Alessandro slaughtered all of the attackers, the abyss would overwhelm us. It was my turn. I sent a focused thought out. No. The abyss answered.
Mine.
Images bombarded me. People dying. Alessandro dying. Linus dying. Constructs of plant and metal rising, flooding out of the pit onto the streets. And me, sitting in a protective bubble of magic, safe and imprisoned in the mountain of flesh now rolling toward me. The abyss wanted to kill. He loved the power of it. It was central to his being. That's what he lived for. That's what he was made for. Offer him what he wants, and he will bring his people to you to get it.
Catalina, get out of there! Bug screamed. Get out!
I thought of Nevada's baby. A tiny little baby, helpless and just drawing his first breath. I thought of my sisters and my mom. I thought of Alessandro. No, I would stop this Armageddon. My family wasn't going to fuel the Abyss's army. Nobody else would ever end up as a brain and a spinal cord wrapped in foul magic. I would end this now. I pulled the power from the circle. It poured into my wings and they burst out of me, huge and glowing.
I opened my mouth and my song erupted, full of power, a siren's call beyond anything I had ever imagined. Power surged out of me, no longer spiraling in delicate shoots, but flowing like an ocean tide. My feet had left the ground, but I barely noticed. Come to me. Please me. The wave of my magic collided with the constellation of the abyss's mind. I sang. It was an ancient song, full of promises and whispers of bliss, the kind of song that caused seasoned sailors to hurl themselves into raging seas just to get closer. Love me. Come to me and love me. My magic swept through the nebula of the abyss's mind, brushing aside his defenses all the way to its glowing center. It wrapped around the glowing star that used to be a human mind and saturated it. Every construct in the pit stopped and shuddered. Show yourself to me. Come to me. Trust me. I am happiness. I am ecstasy. I am what you desire. The constructs charged toward me. On the island, Stephen gripped Marat, trying to shield him. The abyss flowed around them and hurled himself against the foot of the building I was on. The constructs piled onto each other, building a hill of squirming bodies. Yes, that's what I want. More. Show me more. The mire boiled, tentacles thrust out, slapping against the hill of plant and metal growing against the building. The glowing dots of the abyss's nodes converged on me. The shining center moved, shifting toward me. The vast mound crept to me like a colossal amoeba, rising as it neared. 10 feet high. 20. Images burst in my mind, like soap bubbles. A huge, grotesque monstrosity wrapping itself around the building, begging for my touch. I changed the pitch of my song. No. Ugly. Clumsy. Graceless. The nebula that was the abyss convulsed in pain. I sent my own image back. Alessandro glowing with magic, moving with elegance and grace. Strong, fast, beautiful, worthy, worthy of me. A shudder ran through the constructs in unison. The center of the mound collapsed, sucked into itself. The tiny glowing stars of nodes surfaced from the pile by the building and rolled into the hole in the center of the mound. The constructs on the outer edges fell apart. The nebula of the abyss's mind contracted, compacting in on itself. Water vapor erupted on the edges of the mound. Chunks of it began to fall away. The abyss was building something, throwing all of its energy and magic into it. The nodes aggregated around the central light, all but merging with it. Tentacles ripped metal from random constructs and hurled it into the hole in the mound. Yes, I sang. Glowing. Beautiful. Yes, that's what I want. The mound crept forward again. Its edges decayed. Large pieces broke off and sank, inert. The nebula compacted on itself. My vision swam. My heart fluttered in the cage of my ribs. I had channeled so much magic, and my body was giving out. I had to hold on. Almost there. Almost. The shambling mound landed at the foot of the hill the constructs built against my building. The nebula was gone now. Only its center remained, condensed into blinding white. The mound split. A cloud of revolting stench washed over me and dispersed. Giant tentacles surged up in front of me and opened like the petals of a flower,
A glowing man stood at their center. A giant with the body of a god, made with white metal and radiant flowers. Perfect and astonishingly beautiful. I looked at his face. Nothing in the world could compare. His eyes glowed with blue light. I wanted to weep and prostrate myself, but then I would have to stop looking at him, and it was beyond me to turn away. I had never seen anything so mesmerizing. I had to keep looking at him. I could spend a lifetime staring. Our minds touched, and I saw myself standing next to him with a body that matched his. He would remake me. I would be Eve to his Adam. The pit would be our Eden. No one would cast us out of it, and humanity would serve us forever. He smiled. Magic radiated from him and washed over me. My body trembled, every nerve on fire. He was made of pure power and will. Every node he possessed was in that body. There weren't enough adjectives in any human language to describe him. He opened his arms. His mind brushed against mine.
Join me.
I waved my hand. The circle around me died. I sang to him a sweet song filled with love and longing. Alessandro screamed my name. The abyss held out his hand. In my memories, Alessandro kissed me and whispered, "I love you." It was the happiest I had ever been. I stepped out of the circle, picked up Linus's sword, and rested my hand in the abyss's perfect fingers. He smiled. I hammered a spike of magic into the sword and plunged my blade into his chest, where the once human mind burned with magic. The null space carved through the armored body and pierced the fragile brain. The Titan fell to his knees. I dropped my sword. His magic blinked, pulsed with bright white, and died. He had melded all of his nodes to make this body for me. Unified into one, they were no longer capable of survival. I felt them dying one by one. The last one winked out. The awe-inspiring body at my feet fell apart. The beautiful, murderous god of the pit was dead. And I had killed him. The full enormity of it hit me, and I screamed my grief and pain into the sky before it tore me apart, because I had murdered something indescribably beautiful, and it would never exist again. The magic turned my scream into a song, and once the last notes of it died, I had nothing left. My legs gave out. I crashed onto the roof. Alessandro would live. Everyone would live. Behind me, a loud hum announced incoming helicopters. Chapter 17. Alessandro came for me, covered in blood, picked me up, and we jumped off the roof while Bug screamed through his drone. I closed my eyes and clung to him, shell-shocked, my mind reeling. It felt like everything was happening to someone else. Alessandro loaded me into a helicopter. I held on to him, afraid that he would leave, but he stayed on the seat next to me, his arm around me.
"It's over," he murmured. "It's all over."
All around us, soldiers moved with purpose, but there was nobody to kill. Alessandro had reaped a bloody harvest. None of Archon's people survived. Linus appeared by the helicopter and studied me, his face concerned.
"Do you know who I am?"
I stared at him, blank. Making words was too hard. He glanced at Alessandro.
"Has she spoken?"
"No."
Linus turned to me, his face tense. His eyes looked afraid.
"Catalina, say something. Anything at all. It's very important. Make a sound, but don't sing. Say a word.
I opened my mouth. Nothing came out.
Just one word. You can do it. Say no. You say no so well. You've had a lot of practice.
I struggled to push words out.
Come on,
Linus prompted, his voice gentle.
Just one word. Remember, don't sing. You can do it.
Something clicked in my brain. I told my family that I'm the deputy. Linus exhaled and slumped against the side of the chopper. For a moment, he looked old.
Don't kill my family.
That's fine. Don't worry. The bailers are safe. Quite frankly, I'm surprised that it took so long. I thought you would tell them months ago. It's unrealistic to expect a deputy warden's family to not know their position.
It was another one of his tests. Bastard. I looked at Alessandro. Please hurt him for me.
Good job, Linus said. Carry on.
He went away. I closed my eyes and stuck my face into Alessandro's shoulder and let the world go. I had no idea how much time had passed. At some point, we were in the air, and then I fell asleep again. I woke up because the helicopter landed on a roof. Alessandro gently sat me upright.
Where are we?
I asked. He smiled.
Come on, there is someone who wants to meet you.
We got out and entered the building. He held my hand and we walked down a hallway, took an elevator down, walked down another hallway. I was just walking next to him. I didn't want to be away from him. I loved him so much, and a part of me still couldn't believe that the abyss was dead and that this wasn't a dream. I needed convincing that I was actually here and not sitting in the bubble of the abyss's magic, deep inside his mound. We stopped at a nurse's station. Someone put a cap and gown on me. Someone poured sanitizer on my hands and wiped my face with some kind of wipe. It smelled like rubbing alcohol and stung. A nurse told me to follow her. I tried to stay with Alessandro, but she told me he was too bloody. I followed her down the hallway through a door with four guards outside of it. In a large, comfortable room, Nevada sat on the bed. Connor sat next to her in a chair. I saw Mom and Grandma Frida, Arabella, and my cousins. Nevada was holding a bundle of blankets. I came closer, and she offered it to me.
Congratulations. You're an aunt.
I looked at my tiny, red-faced nephew, reached out, and touched his little fist. Everything hit me at once. I wrapped my arms around the baby, sat down on the floor, and cried. The next morning, I sat in a plush chair in the America Tower, waiting for the start of the special session of the Texas Assembly. Cheryl had somehow escaped the pit and thrown herself on the mercy of the Texas houses. She must have run the moment Alessandro jumped off the roof, otherwise he would have killed her. Instead, she ended up at the house of one of her well-respected friends. All of her charitable work and connections bought her a lot of goodwill, and she intended to use every drop of it to shield herself from Lander's vengeance. She still thought this was about Felix's murder. Alessandro sat in a chair next to me. I had brought him in as my guest. He was in his full Count Segredo persona. Beautiful suit, beautiful hair, beautiful smile. You would never know that less than 24 hours ago he'd killed 16 of Archon's professional soldiers. I still remembered him smeared with soot and blood. I also remembered waking up next to him this morning. Covered with soot and blood or clean and in my bed, I didn't care. I would be with him no matter what he did. Alessandro saw me looking, reached over, took my hand, and squeezed it.
Around us, the massive chamber was slowly filling up with primes in jet-black robes, each wearing a green stole draped over their shoulders. We were in the upper chamber, where only the heads of various Texas houses could vote. Cheryl had demanded the judgment of her peers, and only the heads of houses qualified. Five rows away, in the front, Lander Morton sat in his wheelchair. A dark-haired teenage boy sat on his right, and two younger girls, both with the same chocolate-brown hair, sat on his left. Lander had brought Felix's children to face their father's murderer. I had made a report to Lander. It was carefully curated by Linus, but it outlined the version of events with enough accuracy. Cheryl had unleashed an illegal construct into the pit. When Felix decided to seek outside assistance, she panicked, lured him to the pit, and killed him. Then the construct ran amok, and when Cheryl realized that discovery was inevitable, she brought her house's industrial army to kill off all the witnesses. Linus had raided Cheryl's workshop. He'd recovered the vial with traces of the Osiris serum in it. That was what remained of Cheryl's sample. She had used all of it to push the nameless telepath's mind into becoming the Abyss. She didn't know how to duplicate the serum, and probably decided that bringing in someone else to replicate it was too risky. As if on cue, Cheryl walked through the door, surrounded by primes. I recognized a few faces, all old houses, all respected. She saw Lander and kept walking, looking straight ahead. Her squad shielded her from Lander's gaze, but not from his voice.
"Look, children," he croaked. "Look at the woman who murdered your father."
Cheryl crossed the floor and sat down in the front row on the other side. Alessandro grimaced. "What?"
"I should have killed her."
"You can't just murder the Saint of Houston without some pomp and circumstance."
"I realize that. I just dislike leaving things unfinished. It was my last job. A shame to leave it undone."
"That's right. Lander had hired him to kill his son's murderer." "Wait. Last job?" He turned to me.
"I told you, I'm not leaving."
He would stay. He really meant it. My phone chimed. A call from Byrne. Odd. He almost always texted. I put it to my ear. "Yes?"
"I finally got the footage from a gas station near Christian Ravenscroft's country club. You said the telekinetic was a prime. Are you sure?"
"Yes, why?" A dark-haired man sat down in the row behind us. Alessandro went still. I turned my head and glanced at the man. Recognition struck me.
"I'll call you back."
I hung up. There was no need to continue. I knew who Byrne saw on that recording. I skimmed his mind. It made no sense. This man was barely as significant the last time we met. Now, he was a prime, a blazing, powerful prime. This was the power I had felt in the pit.
"Long time no see."
The man grinned at me, his handsome face sharp. I kept my voice neutral. "Prime Sagredo, let me introduce Xavier Ramirez Cicada. He used to be Rogan's first cousin, once removed."
"We've met," Alessandro said.
Telekinetic, silos, semi. Xavier was the one who'd knocked Alessandro off that silo, to his near death.
"It's Prime Cicada now. You're probably wondering how,"
Xavier said, a light Spanish accent overlaying his words.
"The Osiris serum is a wonderful thing."
"When we raided Diatheke, Archon's pet scientist was trying to find a way to augment one's magic with the serum. Her method warped her subjects. Apparently, not all of them." Xavier leaned his elbows on the backs of our seats and nodded toward Lander and the children.
"Here's the deal. You move, they die."
Alessandro scanned the chamber.
If it was up to me, Shabir continued, I would kill you both.
He looked at Alessandro.
You for obvious reasons.
He looked at me.
And you, because you destroyed my family.
You destroyed his family and I wasn't invited? Alessandro said, his tone light.
I didn't destroy anything. Shabier was under the impression he was related to Rogan. I simply found out that his mother chose to cheat on her husband.
I looked at Shabier.
It's not my fault that you're a bastard.
Shabier bared his teeth at me.
When the time comes, and it will, I'll make you suffer. I have learned all sorts of wonderful ways to make the pain last and last and last.
You were a sadistic little shit as a teenager, I told him. I see you haven't changed.
This is so fun, Shabier said. But sadly, I have to take care of a bit of business.
Please, Alessandro invited.
I'm getting bored.
Well, we can't have that.
The old man feels a sense of obligation to you for killing your father in front of you. He didn't recognize you in Montreal, but he figured it out when you came back to life like Lazarus. He's inclined to let you walk away. He feels it's fair. He killed your father, you killed three of his best, and let's not forget Cheryl.
I'm overcome by his generosity.
Alessandro's voice was light and breezy.
You should be. As I said, I don't understand it, but he's the boss. Walk away, stop trying to kill him, stop fucking up his plans, and he'll let bygones be bygones. However, this dynamic duo you've got going is annoying, so I have orders to break the two of you up.
Shabier smiled at me.
Everything you think he is a lie. His family is penniless. They've been drowning in debt for generations. They started borrowing money in the 18th century and never stopped. Now they are so deep in the hole they will never get out. His cars, rented. His clothes, bought secondhand. His pictures, staged. The magic of Photoshop.
Alessandro's face was unreadable.
You see, with his kind of magic, he's only good for two jobs, bodyguard or assassin. And his grandfather wouldn't let him be either because it's beneath a Sagredo to serve other men. Do you know what his purpose in life is? To look pretty so they can auction him off to the highest bidder. When some idiot rich girl marries him, they will use her dowry to stave off their creditors so they can stay afloat for just a little while longer. That's how they survive. His Instagram is a billboard advertising him to his future bride. He's a prince in plastic jewels.
Alessandro's expression was still blank. He looked almost bored. How much must it have cost him? He was so proud.
Except our boy here decided to not play by the rules. They tried to marry him off three times and he sabotaged every single engagement beyond repair.
Shabier shook his head mockingly.
Why couldn't you be a good boy, Alessandro? Why couldn't you marry a rich girl and leech off of her so your family could keep pretending to have some tattered dignity? Your father did it. Well, for a while anyway.
You fucking asshole. You won't live to get old, I promised him.
Wait, you haven't heard the best part yet.
Shabier grinned.
His grandfather got so tired of dealing with him that he kicked him out of the family. He isn't a count. He isn't even a Sagredo. He's been excised.
Oh my God.
I think your pauper prince truly loves you, poor fool. It's a shame.
My grandmother knew. I thought she'd been talking about his clothes, but Victoria knew.
All he has is what you see. He's been running around the planet, killing assassins and sending money home to his poor mother so she can keep the lights on for his two sisters. He doesn't even keep what he earns.
So many things made sense now. Shabier turned to Alessandro.
There is something you should know about her, too. She's a gold digger, like her sister. Her whole family is. Without money, a title, and a house, you're worthless to her. What's that fun American expression? She will drop you like a hot potato.
Alessandro stared at him, his expression so dark I barely recognized him.
Go home, Alessandro. Accept what you are. Your grandfather refused to announce the excision in public because he still hopes you will come back to the fold and earn your keep by fucking some rich heiress until she opens her bank accounts. That's your destiny.
Alessandro smiled. It chilled me to the bone.
Well, I have done my part.
Xabier rose.
Please enjoy the rest of your day.
He got up and walked away. Alessandro looked at me. He didn't say anything. He just looked at me. They had tried to auction him. Like a horse. He must have known that's what they had planned for him. He'd spent half of his life pretending to be someone he wasn't. Linus sat down next to me.
The show is about to start.
Slowly, deliberately, Alessandro turned away from me and looked at the dais. The Speaker of the Assembly, Luciana Cabrera, walked into the chamber. She was a Hispanic woman in her 60s who had been elected to the position after the previous speaker retired last year. A white man in his 40s walked onto the dais carrying a golden staff. He banged it on the floor. A pulse of magic burst from him.
This special session is now open.
I didn't even care anymore. Alessandro sat next to me, still like a statue, and I wanted to fix it. Luciana walked up to her throne-like chair on the dais and sat.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on such short notice. I promise this will be quick. As you all know, Cheryl Castellano, prime and head of House Castellano, has appealed to this body. She claims to be falsely accused of murdering Felix Morton, prime and heir to House Morton. She believes that her business partners conspired with Lander Morton, prime and head of House Morton, to intentionally smear her name in an effort to remove her from the board of the Pitt Reclamation Project, and requests that we hear her case and render our judgment.
Cheryl had some balls. Wow.
Normally, the Texas Assembly would be only too happy to adjudicate this matter.
A light ripple of laughter ran through the chamber. The Texas Assembly hated dealing with inter-house feuds. Luciana raised her hand. The laughter died.
Regretfully, we have another pressing matter, which overrides this appeal.
A burly bailiff who looked like she could stop a tank barehanded walked up onto the dais and handed the speaker a sealed envelope. A camera projected the image of the envelope onto a huge digital screen behind Luciana. It bore the seal of the National Assembly. Luciana opened the envelope, pulled out an old-fashioned parchment, and unrolled it.
Cheryl Amanda Castellano of House Castellano, you are hereby remanded into the custody of the National Assembly on charges of crimes against humanity and unlawful magic experimentation.
The chamber erupted.
Order!
The gold staff roared. Cheryl jumped up.
No! No!
Chains burst out of the ground and wound around Cheryl. She fell silent, her scream cut off. Her eyes rolled back in her head and she sagged down. Two figures stepped out from an alcove behind the dais, both wearing crimson robes with hoods that hid their faces. The shorter figure waved a hand and Cheryl rose 3 inches off the ground. They walked to the doorway and Cheryl followed, gliding silently. I leaned to Linus and whispered, "Who are they?"
"Wardens from other states,"
he murmured back. Right. And everyone would see Linus sitting in the chamber, presumably having nothing at all to do with the scary hooded figures taking Cheryl away. His identity as a warden would remain confidential.
"This is an outrage!"
Lander howled, punching the arms of his chair.
"She killed my son! I demand vengeance!"
The robed figures paused before Lander's wheelchair. The front figure spoke in a deep female voice.
"The National Assembly regrets the loss of your son and acknowledges the anguish of House Morton. Should she be found guilty, we invite you to join us for her execution. Be assured, Prime Morton, you won't have to wait long for that invitation.
Lander took a deep breath, then sagged in his chair. The hooded pair walked out of the chamber, Cheryl in tow.
All is well that ends well, Linus murmured. I'll see you both for dinner tonight. My place.
Sunshine flooded the parking lot. Heat rose from the pavement in waves. I pulled the black robe off and tucked it under my arm. Another moment and I would bake like a pie. Tonight, Linus would want the full report. Most likely he was working on a plan to take down Archon. That was okay. Archon needed to die and Chabier had to die with him. I was fine with that. In front of us, a large fountain in the shape of a giant dandelion sent mist and water into the air. Alessandro hadn't said a word. I held the keys out to him. Would you like to drive? He turned to me, his face grim.
We need to talk.
I had expected it, but my world cracked in half anyway. I stopped. A muscle jerked in his cheek.
What he said was true. Every word of it.
I know.
I grew up pretending to be the man I should have been. My job was made very clear to me after my father died. My mission in life was to attract the right kind of bride with a bank account large enough to keep our family alive. I went to the parties wearing designer clothes after listening to my mother cry on the phone with our creditors. I attended gallery openings and drank champagne while my sisters ate the same pasta with nothing but a bit of salt for 3 days in a row because it was all we had. The burden of it, the shame he must have felt, had to be crushing. But he talked about it as if he were discussing the morning news over coffee. Every time I tried to earn money, my family spat on it. After the third time my grandfather hurled the money I brought home in my face, I realized that they would never accept it. And when I refused to be sold, they excised me. In the last decade, I've earned over $60 million. All of it, except for $50,000 I keep in my account as operational expenses, went to our debt and to my mother and my sisters. Xavier is right. I'm the reason their lights are on. I have earned enough to keep the creditors off their back and to make sure that my mother and my sisters won't starve. They can afford clothes and shoes. They won't go without. I would have kept going, but my oldest sister grew up. She'd acted as my agent since she was 14, but now she refuses to take my blood money. She says she doesn't want the guilt of knowing I might die for it.
I think I would like your sister. His voice was so detached. He'd locked all his feelings into a cage of will and kept them there.
I can offer you nothing except myself. All I can do is be an assassin or a bodyguard. I'm done being an assassin, and you're the only person I want to guard. I tried to tell you this before, but I wanted you so much, it almost made me insane. I am a prince in plastic jewels, but I was still raised as a prime. I know what a prime should bring to the marriage.
And what would that be?
A stable house, political and financial connections, alliances, wealth, security. I have none of it. I come to you with nothing. Right here, right now. This is all I will ever be. I can't leave you on my own, Catalina, but if you tell me to go, I will. I promise I'll never bother you again.
He waited. His words floated from my memory.
You're beautiful, you're brilliant, and if they knew how dangerous you were, you would get buried in proposals.
It was my turn. Alessandro, you're the most powerful Antastasi on the planet. What you did in the pit was beyond anything I could have imagined. You're strong, skilled, educated, and you have this incredible brain that unravels complex schemes in seconds.
You walked into a building full of trained killers and eliminated everyone there to save a child you barely knew. And then you went to see Victoria Tremaine and threatened to cut her head off, and she let you go because you were charming and your bearing is flawless. Who in this world can do that? You're kind to my relatives when you have nothing to gain. You're probably the only person aside from my family who understands me and can call me on my crap. And with all of that, you love me. You bring so much, Alessandro. He stared at me. Don't you get it? Right here, right now, you are everything I ever wanted. I don't care about money, connections, or reputation. We can earn all these things together. I just want you. You're so much more than I hoped for. If you come home with me, I'll be the luckiest person alive. I didn't see him move. One moment he was standing by the fountain, and the next he kissed me, his lips hot and desperate. He stole my breath away. Stay with me, I asked him. Always, he promised. Epilogue. The hospital hallway lay shrouded in shadow. An older, distinguished man was waiting by the nurse's station, a lone nurse nervously pacing by him. An elevator chimed quietly. The doors parted and an older woman stepped out, accompanied by a young man with a sharp haircut and dressed in a black suit. The older man by the station raised his arms.
Where have you been?
He whispered.
Spare me, the older woman hissed. This wasn't exactly easy.
Hurry, we have 15 minutes, the nurse told them.
This baby is guarded like Fort Knox.
She ushered the three of them into a room and shut the door. The young man in the suit parked himself by the door. The older woman paced.
What if he's a dud?
He is not a dud. None of them have been.
She pressed her hands together and walked some more. Hurried steps came from outside. The door swung open and the same nurse entered, carrying a newborn, two guards behind her. The young man in a suit raised his hand, and the two guards halted, their eyes blank. The old woman rushed to the nurse and gently took the baby out of her arms.
Leave us.
The nurse glanced at the older man. He nodded. She stepped outside and closed the door. Tenderly, the old woman peeled off the blanket, revealing the baby's round face and tiny fists in pale mittens.
What a beautiful boy. What a lovely, lovely boy.
The older man grinned. The woman rocked the baby and smiled.
Look, Trevor, isn't he the most beautiful child you've ever seen?
For the first time, the young man in the suit spoke.
Yes, ma'am. He is.
This is Emily Rankin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Emerald Blaze, a hidden legacy novel by Ilona Andrews. Presented by William Morrow and Harper Audio. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2020 by Ilona Gordon and Andrew Gordon. Production copyright 2020 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.